I think they like you, Steve.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling.
Good morning and happy Monday to you. Spring-like temperatures are in the air. Thanks for being with us. It's the Steve Cochran Show. Dave, I'm kind of obsessed with the Olympics. I can't stop watching.
It is tough to stop watching. And there was some really cool stuff over the weekend.
Yeah, and Lindsey Vonn, you know what? The haters on Twitter, I thought she did very well, and she responded very well, too, with a lot of people criticizing her run, her first run.
Politics.
Yeah, and her politics, and she said, you know what, I sleep great at night.
Yeah, I thought her response was very appropriate.
Thought she did very well.
And I thought it's interesting, too, she said she doesn't really want her competitors to know how fast she is.
Yeah.
So in the training runs, she said she takes it. She's not going for speed necessarily.
I loved that yesterday. Yeah. That was very cool.
What is the event where they, you know how on the snowboard where they hit the pipes, but now they're skiing and they're hitting the pipes?
It's the slope style.
Slope style. Okay. Yeah. I love that.
But how about
weird with the pipes?
But the pipes are weird, but how about, well, they have the half pipe too. That's
something else. But I love
how about the rails.
How about the big air snowboarding?
Oh my god, that's crazy.
How great was that?
That was so cool. That was last night, and some start at the top.
You guys impressed that I didn't fall?
Yeah,
no, I
completely.
Was Steve.
But why, Steve, does some start at the very top of that ramp and others get to start on the side? That's what was confusing.
You mean as they're coming down?
No, when they start at the very, they can start at the very tip top of that, or they can start on the side.
I didn't really notice.
I noticed two of the snowboarders doing that.
I think you're talking about when they do the rail thing.
No. This is not the rail. This is just the big,
because they can pick their
snowboard
route. They can pick their different
right.
This is, ramps. This is just the snowboard where they go down the huge hill.
Probably sleeping with the judges.
Do a... Oh,
maybe
go.
Some are more afraid
go.
Of heights and like to be a little lower.
Wait, that's not it?
No.
Steve.
I don't think so.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm looking for an answer here, Dave. I'm an investigator.
They interviewed that one girl, and she's like, she doesn't like the height aspect of the whole thing. I said, what?
And then they have the wrong sport.
Yeah, I know. They take an elevator to get up there. That's so cool.
I just want 365 days of the snowboard races where everybody goes
at
the same
time. That
is
cool.
The snowboard cross?
Yeah, it's over though now, right?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. How about you see the bobsled guy fall? They fell last night?
He got
totally
stuck
wiped
in there.
Out.
Well, yeah, if you want to see more of that, YouTube has a lot of compilations. Yeah. Not that I watched them.
That has to hurt. And those are big guys in there.
Yeah, they're huge. Yeah. How do they get them? It's like Winnie the Pooh stuck in the hole.
Did they not do the four-man anymore?
I didn't see the four-man yet.
Do, I think.
Oh, did they?
I didn't
I
see
think,
that
yeah.
yet, though.
Because the four-man, the most amazing thing about the four-man is it's four grown men running who all jump into the same hole at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, the driver jumps in, and then the three jump in behind him, and nobody gets kicked in the head.
Yeah, and what are
you,
two and three
Dave,
do?
Joe, and Orion.
Two and three?
Yeah.
They reconsider what their career choices were.
You, Dave, Joe, and Orion could be like the morning show bobsled team, all in a sled.
First off, there wouldn't be a lot of jumping. Dave would jump.
Dave could be the
Joe would jump.
Joe jump. But Joe's 31, Joe, is that right? 32?
30.
Yeah, so Joe can still jump.
Okay. You'd be steering, I bet.
6-12. Also over the weekend, I had the great 20-minute pleasure of Northwestern basketball on Saturday, where they played so well.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Dave, you saw me. I was giddy.
You were giddy.
I was giddy.
You were texting me from across
the
way.
You're in the middle of doing the game. I'm texting you from the seats. And I come down at halftime, and Joey Meyer, who does the games with you, Joey Meyer goes, a lot of basketball left.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Joey.
Which was unfortunate.
Joey was totally trying to reel me back in the entire first half.
I'm telling you. Michigan State comes back and really two different halves.
You
two
know what
completely
it was?
Different halves.
You know what it was? Michigan State was the New England Patriots.
Yep.
And the Wildcats on Saturday were
the Atlanta Falcons.
They were the Atlanta Falcons.
That's the game. That was the game. And they shot 60% in the first half and 6% in the second half.
Just about.
There was a, you know, one of the people I was with, the lovely and talented Luann Roth, said, there's something wrong with that other basket. Because Michigan State couldn't score on that basket, and now we can't score on that basket.
I said the same thing on the air, by the way.
Yeah, there's a lid over it. There's something wrong with it.
Like Tupperware?
It's tilted the wrong way. How glad are you going to be? Listen, with all due respect to the Allstate Arena, how glad are you going to be back on campus?
Thrilled?
Yeah, that's the word you're looking for? At 6:13, busy show ahead. We'll do the top six at six here. Well, we do it right now. You want to do it now, Joe? Go ahead. Crank it up.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
By the way, I want to thank, who should I thank? Mike Polisky, I assume?
I thank Chris Collins.
Chris Collins. Thanks, Chris Collins. Chris, man. I saw Doug Collins leaving the place. I wanted to hug him. Yeah. Oh, and can I just say one other thing about that game? Michigan State fans, not the classiest bunch. As we're leaving, the Michigan State fans are doing their cheer and their fight song in the concourse after they came back to win. Now, you have the right to do that. You won. However, you should have won in a cakewalk, and it took the greatest comeback in the school's history to beat Northwestern. So how about you get out in the parking lot, you go home, and you cheer? It just wasn't
There close. Were a lot of them there, which I think just to be expected given the size of Allstate Arena as opposed to Welch Drive Arena and... Where it should
How big is the new building going to be?
It's going to be just about the same. Actually, a few seats fewer than the 8,100 it sat in the old days.
It's going to be a loud building.
It's going to be very loud. Great home court.
Yep.
Thanks for coming out, by the way.
Well, I enjoyed 20 minutes of it. But I appreciated the Maalox vendor coming up in the second half.
That's nice.
Maalox! Who needs Maalox? Item number one, Chicago activists marching for changes for gun laws after the mass shooting in Florida, and expect high school kids from around the area. I love this idea. We'll play some sound from this from the Sunday shows a little bit later on. But it's not just the high school kids in Florida. High schools are being activated across the country to march for common sense gun law changes. And they're the same people that put together the Women's March.
How about that?
Are helping them organize.
That's great.
So that's coming up. And if you think that's not going to change, that's absolutely going to. You know, I salute Rush Limbaugh's success, but he's a big dope. And he was on, I don't know, somebody's talk show yesterday. And he was talking about how March isn't going to change anything. Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah. When you see kids marching in the streets by the millions. Some of these cowards in Congress will step up.
We had some of the best sound bites over the weekend from teenagers speaking out about this, and they were just poetic and fluent and just very well spoken.
Intelligent and courageous. Nothing you're getting out of Congress. Next. Black Panther, record-setting, $218 million at the North American box office this weekend, $387 million around the globe. I haven't seen it yet. Have you?
No.
Anybody on the show seen it?
Not seen
no?
it.
Busy weekend. Didn't get a chance to see it, but definitely want to see it. Looks like a huge hit. And new format led to a more competitive NBA All-Star game. Team LeBron beat Team Stephen 148-145. I didn't see a minute of this game. Was it entertaining at all?
I did not watch much of it. I was watching Olympics.
148-145. Let's go to Joe. He's live at the All-Star Game, which was in what city?
Staples Center in L.A.
I was in L.A., as Joe knows, because he's still there. Joe, year after year, it's just a three-point dunk fest.
Yep.
It's three points dunk. Why was this year any different?
You had players drafted onto separate teams, so you had teammates that would normally be on the same conference team. They were playing against each other. So the best team in the league, the Warriors, have Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, and they were actually playing against each other last night.
Was it entertaining?
Yeah, the first quarter that I watched was, and then they kicked me out because I lost my ticket.
Live from L.A., that's Joe. You should come back to work now. We need you in Chicago.
No, I'll start walking.
Okay. Next. The American women are back in the gold medal game for a third straight Olympics. They'll play the winner of the Canada Olympic athletes from Russia game on Thursday. Trump's backing the Olympic athletes from Russia, by the way, in that one. Looking to win their first gold since 1998 when women's hockey debuted at the Olympics. So good for them. And I'm told 4 of the 5 goals yesterday came from University of Minnesota Golden Gophers. Alums from that team.
Go Big Ten.
By the way, they have told the hockey players not to shake hands, not to go through the handshake line.
Because of the flu?
Because of the norovirus.
Ooh.
However, they've recommended fist bumps versus handshakes. However,
how about waves from across? Hi!
If it were me, that's what I would do.
Yep. What if they left their gloves on?
But the U.S. women did shake hands.
No, they did.
They are going to still do it. Okay. The U.S. men will not.
They're sportsmanlike, womanlike.
Men are wimps.
Next. Justice Department indicted 13 Russians and 3 different companies, laying out in riveting detail how Russia carried out a social media campaign to disrupt the 2016 presidential election, which led to President Trump being just giddy and thrilled until he watched a lot of TV over the weekend, and then he lost his freaking Twitter mind.
Oh, my God.
More on that later, and we will have former prosecutor Pat Brady on to explain the indictment. And finally... Commander Paul Bauer was laid to rest on Saturday. On Friday, Patrick Kane, Duncan Keefe, Brent Seabrook, and Patrick Sharp all attended his wake. They're not looking for publicity. Neither are the Blackhawks. It was just a nice, classy gesture.
Absolutely.
For the family and for Commander Paul Bauer, who was a huge Blackhawks fan, was laid to rest with some Blackhawks regalia with him.
And on Saturday night, before the game with Washington, they hung a Blackhawks jersey with Commander Bauer's name on the back. Number 18.
That'll make you cry.
Yeah, and it wasn't just the players. Apparently, number of Blackhawks front office people, John McDonough, Jay Blunk, number of others went over to the wake as well on Friday.
And it meant a lot to the family.
Just two quick things. We had Alderman O'Shea on about the pancake breakfast with the bulletproof vests.
Yeah.
They had a record turnout Sunday, Steve. 3,000 people showed up at that pancake breakfast.
Well, I hope a few of your listeners are gone since we made such a federal case out of it Friday.
And you could still make a donation to online to that fund. And the new Police and Fire Training Academy in West Garfield Park will be named after Commander Bauer.
Well, that's awfully nice as well. Now, what is the website for the donations?
You know, I'm going to get you the right one because there's a GoFundMe page out there, and I'm going to get you this one, though, because it's specifically for the bulletproof vests.
All right, well, let's come back and do that.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Happy President's Day. 625 now. What's the website for the vest?
It is getbehindthevest.org. Getbehindthevest, all one word, .org.
Throughout the morning, I'll be supplying you with fascinating facts about presidents, because I'd prefer to talk about the ones that came before this one. George Washington. Here's a fascinating fact about President George Washington. He got a sweet deal on his teeth. When his teeth went bad, there was originally some skepticism and even some question about whether or not there could be some scandal, because George Washington's teeth were supplied to him at 1/3 of the going market rate. Can you imagine a president getting a deal on his teeth?
It's like a Groupon.
It's a shock. John Adams in 1776 endorsed the concept of false consciousness. According to Adams, very few men who have no property have any judgment of their own. They talk and vote as they are directed by some man of property who is attached to their minds and interest. The solution, said Adams, was massive property redistribution. Not a great idea.
No.
In other words, the rich people get more. Thomas Jefferson was an intelligent man, torn between his desire to be a moral man and lead others to be the same. Oh, and the fact that he owned a lot of people.
And
it didn't matter how it needed to make sense. Therefore, in his book, Notes on Virginia, he revealed that Africans need less sleep than normal white people. 6 sentences later, he said, no, wait, Africans sleep more.
There you go. Oh,
my God. He had some guilt. Remember, he was sort of married to one of his slaves and had several children with her.
Didn't he have he had a bunch of mistresses, right?
Yeah, but it was one in particular.
Yeah.
He also supposedly had a really high, squeaky voice. You know, there's not a lot of written about the great orator Thomas Jefferson's because he didn't talk that much.
We should ask John Williams.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw Hamilton. His voice wasn't high and squeaky.
That's not the one that was dead. I'm talking about the dead one.
Okay.
The band.
James Madison, America's shortest president, 5 feet 4 inches tall.
Oh.
Or as Dave likes to call him, reasonable.
I don't say that.
James Monroe. Oddly enough, he promulgated the Monroe Doctrine. The Monroe Doctrine, you know what it is? Let's see how many of you were paying attention in history class. Dave Barry, my friend Dave Barry, wrote about the Monroe Doctrine. Other nations are not allowed to mess around with the internal affairs of a nation in this hemisphere, but we are. Ha, ha, ha. That's Dave Barry's explanation of the Monroe Doctrine.
It's very poetic, especially today.
John Quincy Adams loves skinny dipping in the Potomac. Do you ever swim in the Potomac?
I thought you were going to ask him if you ever
When you were growing up in D.C., could you swim in the Potomac?
And nobody swam in the Potomac that
John Quincy Adams did.
Well, yes, but that was a few years before me.
1825, yeah.
Yeah.
Now ask him if he ever skinny
dipped. But I don't know anything about, did you skinny dip in the Potomac?
Ever? Anywhere else?
I never, I fished in the Potomac. That was about it.
But nobody swam in the Potomac.
Not that I knew of.
Is that like swimming in the Chicago River?
Back then, it was probably worse than swimming in the Chicago River.
There's a story about an investigative reporter named Anne Royale who was sitting on his clothes while he was swimming and refusing to get up until he agreed to do an interview. We don't know if it's true, but it's a good story.
Not quite journalism 101.
Andrew Jackson, famously in command at the 1814 Battle of Horseshoe Bend in now what's called Alabama, after they won some of his troops. This is pretty awful. You ready? Cut strips of skin off dead members of the tribe and used the skin for bridles for their horses.
Oh, God. Mm.
Andrew Jackson is Donald Trump's favorite president.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not that because of that story.
No, there's a million other reasons, I'm sure.
Martin Van Buren was perhaps our most, he dressed really well. He wore outfits that could really wish he had color film back then. They remembered him that he wore an elegant, snuff-colored broadcloth coat with velvet collar to match. His cravat was orange-tinted silk with modest lace tips. His vest was pearl. His trousers were white duck. His nicely fitting gloves were yellow kid. In other words, Martin Van Buren was a pimp.
Yellow gloves, huh?
Fur?
Yeah.
Yellow gloves, that's neat.
How's your cravat?
My cravat's strong.
Good.
Yeah.
Glad to hear it.
We will continue with fascinating facts about all the other presidents. Oh, yeah, and the truth about this one. The text is 312-981-7200 is the number of break, and we're back with the headlines coming up. Dr. Kevin Most on the way as well, and this is 720 WGN.
Woke up after midnight, both my arms and legs were sore. On my upper lip, there's a growth I've never seen before.
That's where it gets really suspenseful.
And I wish that there was someone I could call.
Oh, who could it be?
The WGN hotline.
Sing along in your car.
I have edema on my thighs.
Edema.
Pink stuff in my
pink
eyes.
Stuff.
And I need you now.
It's becoming a big karaoke hit. Dr. Kevin Most joins us. Happy President's Day to you.
Yeah, happy President's Day.
You got a favorite president of all time?
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of partial to Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, me too. I'm a Lincoln guy.
Kind of Kennedy and Abraham Lincoln, probably.
Fascinating coincidences between those two. We'll get into that later with more of our fascinating presidential facts.
Cool.
It's funny, we run out at 44. We don't have any for this one. Sponsored now by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. You want to talk flu?
Sure, let's talk flu.
How come it's so bad?
Yeah. You know, this year was just, I don't want to say a year of bad timing, but it was a couple of things that happened this year. One, we've heard, obviously, over and over and over in the news that the vaccine is not as accurate as we need it to be this year. Probably looking at, you know, 30%, 40% effective rate, where we really would rather it be up towards 80, 85, 90% effective. So that was bad timing of the of picking a bad vaccine this year because of a mutation. And then also when it hit, think about when it hit. Everyone was traveling right then around the holidays. And now this has just gone on and on and on. And really see, we hopefully will start to see a slowdown here in the next week or so, I would hope.
How come it's so deadly?
It's deadly because of the strain that it is. This H3N2 strain is one of the stronger strains. And if you see what's happened, Where it's been deadly has been, unfortunately, in young children and older adults. The people in the middle range there, boy, they feel terrible. They've been knocked out, and they've really missed a lot of work and all of that. But it's really hitting these younger kids because of how fast it hits and how quickly it replicates once it gets in the body and the effects it can have on the lungs. You know, you've heard about the stories of, oh, I was in the emergency room and everything looked okay. The patient went home and, you know, a day and a half later had died. It's just because that virus, when it starts to turn on, takes over more and more cells in our body and just hits us with this huge outpouring, and there's really nothing you can do.
Doc, two quick questions. Is it too late to get a flu shot if you already haven't gotten one? And when is the period from which to catch it someone over? After what? Yeah. After how many days is it safe to either go back to work or school or be in contact with that person?
Well, you think you have the flu, don't go to work.
Exactly. That's probably the biggest thing, and it's one of the things that people don't get right now, and that's why it spread as much as it did. You know, when you go back to work, even if you say, oh, you know, my fever's almost gone, or I've been taking Tylenol and I don't have a fever, you're still spreading that virus. Every time you cough, it's everywhere around you, and it can live, like we've talked in the past, it can live on tables, it can live on chairs, it can live on phones, keyboards, for hours. So the big thing there is, you know, stay home until you're really feeling much, much better. I usually tell people, we write notes for, you know, 4 or 5 days off of work after they've had it for a couple of days. And then as far as the vaccine, you know, you still can get it because we still could have, as we've had in the past, flu into March and flu into April. Takes 2 weeks to work. And if there's another strain that's going to come out, it may have a much better match later in the year.
Is it true? I saw a number this weekend, which sounds wrong to me. It said there could be 1 million people going to the emergency room with the flu?
Easily this year will be 1 million people. Yep.
And the number usually is what?
Oh, 250, maybe 300,000.
So 4 or 5 times that much?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. Wow. Yep. Nothing to mess with, no matter how healthy you are or think you are. When do they start working on next year's vaccine?
Well, they'll be working on it very shortly, unfortunately. And now it's going to be, okay, are we going to see this strain again? And they'll push that into hopefully the Southern Hemisphere, who's making their vaccine currently. And then we'll start worrying about ours, you know, come May and June, maybe even late April. But it's just, I hate to say it's a guess at times, because this year we obviously guessed wrong.
Tamiflu, I know you guys in the medical profession are positive on, but you know it's not a fix; it's a helper. What's the big breakthrough in flu when it happens medicinally? Is it going to be in the virus area or in the treatment once you get it?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we always have talked about the vaccine and how we can perfect the vaccine. And like you said, Tamiflu is okay, but Tamiflu really has some restrictions. You know, you have to take it within the first 48 hours of the symptoms. So sometimes you can't even get into your doctor at that time. So then by the time you get into your doctor, it's too late for Tamiflu. And we're working on the vaccine all the time. But a company out of Japan, very exciting news that came out last week, essentially, I hate to use the word antibiotic for a virus, but a drug that will kill the virus with a single dose and really will stop the virus in its tracks.
Wow.
Which is absolutely phenomenally fascinating.
And are they convinced it works now, or are we still experimenting?
They're still experimenting, but it's being run on clinical trials right now on patients both here in the U.S. and in Japan, and it's showing extremely positive results. We have to remember what happens with this virus. This virus gets in your body, and it takes over your cells, and it says, you know what, I'm going to use your cells to make more virus. That's why it spreads. That's why it stays as long. This drug stops the virus from getting in the cells and doesn't allow it to replicate. So it stops it immediately after a single dose.
Doc, when other countries come up either with a vaccination or a cure or maybe something like this to stop it in its tracks, and it's approved by their government and their citizens have started taking it, does it have to go through that whole process here with our FDA, or is there kind of an agreement, you know what I mean, between our FDA and, say, another country's, what would be their FDA to say, okay, you know what, this is working on us, let's just kind of push the process through a little faster?
It's really a great question, because we have drugs that have been used in Europe for years and years and years, and then they come to the United States and we say, well, wait a second, you still have to prove that they work here. So the FDA allows for something called a fast track. As long as the science behind it is good, they will definitely fast track this drug, and it's whether it gets fast tracked to be used next year or whether it gets fast tracked to be used the following year. We're a little bit more conservative here in the United States. We want to make sure that we're not going to give something that has long-term effects, side effects of it, and we want to make sure that it's a safe drug. And probably the biggest thing is we want to know where it's made so that we can look at the quality of the plant where it's made to make sure that they have meet the FDA standards for safety.
We'll come back, talk about concussions. It's Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. .653 back with Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. All right, Doc, let's talk concussions,
Hey, let's talk one thing first, because I need Andre to have good news. Let's talk about a universal flu vaccine just for a second.
Oh, okay.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, we always talk about flu vaccines, and you always want to know, hey, when are you coming down to give us flu shots? And then you don't tell Andrea that it's a surprise when I show up. Because
she's needle phobic.
Well, I'm happy to see you, just not the needle.
She would have planned a trip to Scotland or something around it. But but what they're working on now in Europe, in England, actually, is a universal vaccine. So a vaccine that would cover all strains. Forget about mutations now. Forget about anything. And it would cover all strains, and you would need it once, and then probably maybe a booster every 5 to 10 years.
Oh, how about that? Best news ever. So
here's the simple way to think about it. We teach vaccines. Think about cars going down the Eisenhower right now. We teach this vaccine to look for red cars. Mm-hmm. And all the red cars are going down. Now they go to Earl Scheib, and now they come back black, and now we can't find them anymore, even though they're still virus. Instead, think of the vaccine that says, I'm going to find all cars. So regardless, so it doesn't allow for that.
It's a badass vaccine.
Exactly. And so it would knock out all strains of the virus. So pretty cool. That's about four years away, but yeah, it'll be good for you.
All right,
so go to concussions, because that's pretty cool, too.
All right, so concussions. We've talked about the various aspects of this many times, but the new news here is what?
The new news is that we actually have a blood test now that we'll be able to use to see if a patient, whether a patient, an athlete, a soldier, whatever, has had a concussion. So in the past, we've always had to do subjective tests instead of objective. In other words, I think he's slurring his speech. I think he's a little confused. I think he's, you know, we don't have the signs, we're using signs and symptoms instead of an objective test. And now what they found is that if the brain has trauma, it releases a protein into the blood, and we can measure that.
Well, that's kind of cool.
So it's really cool. So,
how fast can you turn it around?
Pardon me?
How fast can you turn it around?
Oh, no, it's being tested right now. It'll be out very, very soon. And as far as the turnaround of the test, you're talking hours. So a couple things happen there, and this is very similar to, let's say, you're people that are having a heart attack. We go and we draw blood and we look for something called a troponin level. We know that when the heart has damage, it releases this. Exact same concept with the brain. So two things there. One, it's going to allow us to do more exact or specific concussion testing. And two, it's going to allow us to not have to do $1,000, multi-$1,000 CAT scans and radiation to these individuals as well.
Well, it's a very big deal, and I suppose the long-term goal here would be able to do it on the sideline of a game, right?
The long-term goal would be able to do it at what we call point-of-care testing, so right where it happens. So be able to do it in the battlefield if it's needed in the battlefield, or do it right on the side of the field, whether it be soccer or football or whatever sport. And it's going to allow a couple of things there. One, it will allow for safer return back. And then also allow for much more accurate to make sure we say, hey, that kid, it looks like it. Boy, he looks pretty good. He wants to go back in the game. Oh, no. You know, we're taking this kid out.
Is there...
We could end up with 1 to 3 inches of liquid.
Well, thank you for that. Do most of the breakthroughs that we get in cases like this come from the battlefield? I would assume that's a lot of breakthrough medicine, right?
Yeah. Because think about it, we're kind of spoiled here in the United States, right? If you needed a CAT scan from where you are sitting right now, there's probably 5 CAT scans within 3 blocks or 4 mm-hmm. blocks of you because you're so close to Northwestern down there and, you know, other hospitals.
Right.
But in the battlefield, they might be 2 hours away from a CAT scanner. So a lot of what they're doing in the battlefield is trying to say, how can we take care of our soldiers and keep them safe in areas that are remote? So whether it's, you know, blood testing like this and other even materials, you know, do we have safer helmets for them? Do we have better vests for them? So a lot is being done by the Defense Department.
It's Dr. Kevin Mouse. Thank you, as always, for educating us and straightening us out, you know, teaching us stuff, Doc, really is what I'm trying to say here.
And your good friend Peter DeYoung said to say hello to you.
Oh, good. Did you have fun?
We did, yeah. Got to play a little golf in 80 degrees, and it was nice.
Very warm in the southeast today. Very warm. Oh. It's going to be 90 in Tampa, supposedly.
And I'll tell you, Gil Hands took us around course 4, took Patty and I around course 4.
How is it?
Wow. Yeah. Unbelievable. Nice. Really doing some cool things.
Well, it's great to see Piners finally getting their act together.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for the good news about the flu shot, too, Doc.
You got it, Andrea.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Take care, you guys.
Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. It's 6:58. We'll come back with Steve in the news. And then I asked Pat Brady to join us to explain the indictment of the commies. The 12 Russians who were indicted and the 3 Russian companies as well on Friday from the former prosecutor, Mr. Brady.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Hey, a special guest. We're not doing, an Olympian yet, but I want to get this person in before her window of opportunity closes. Ladies and gentlemen, my daughter, Amy Cochran. You kind of know an Olympian?
Yes, I do.
Who is the Olympian you kind of know?
Evan Lysacek went to the same high school I did. Oh. I think we overlapped for like a year.
So you guys were tight then?
Oh, yes.
Wait, wasn't he he was like a senior when you were a freshman? Or?
I think so, yeah.
It's Aniqua Valley High School out in Naperville. So there you go. Amy Cochran kind of knows an Olympian.
Brush with fame.
Have you guys stayed in touch since you were so close in high school?
Well, I think I probably voted for him when he was on Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, well, there you go.
There you go.
There you go. It's almost like he's living with us. All right. Thanks, daughter.
Yep. Have a good day, guys.
Love
bye,
you.
Amy.
See you,
bye, Amy. She's great.
I forgot he was on Dancing with the Stars.
She kind of knows an Olympian.
And I bet she's been to his Facebook page, too.
Well, I don't want to speak for her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But
that's pretty funny.
I mean, she said she may have voted for him.
Brush with fame.
At 7:12, we'll do more kind of know an Olympian coming up with another special guest here in a few minutes. At 7:12, Pat Brady joins us. Pat used to chase down bad guys. And Pat was a prosecutor before he was a politics guy. Good morning, Pat Brady.
Morning, guys. How you doing?
We're doing fine. Over the weekend, you read the indictment?
Yep, 37 pages. Quite interesting.
All right. So this, to me, does a couple things. It pretty much makes it impossible to fire Bob Mueller, but also it shows that Robert Mueller is not afraid to go anywhere to catch the people that are doing harm to us. Do you agree?
Yeah, and it's interesting. They call these things speaking indictments because it really lays out the facts and what happened. And clearly the Russians, these 13 people and these 3 companies tried to influence our election through social media. What it does, it names names of the Russians. It takes away any defense Trump may have that this is a fake investigation or fake news. And something that hasn't really been talked about, each of these guys named in the indictment, since we won't likely get personal jurisdiction over them, they can never leave Russia again, because as soon as they do, they'll get arrested.
So any company that we have extradition treaties with could arrest them, and we could pick them up from there?
Well, what happens is they're stuck in Russia. If they want to go to Monaco for the holiday, they're going to get arrested because there'll be a detainer warrant for them when they go. So basically, they are stuck in Russia, which for some of these guys is probably a pretty bad development. But the bigger thing is they're actually naming names of who these people are. And the one guy, most importantly, is real close to Putin. So it's clear that Putin is involved in all this stuff, too.
So I know we can't get incredibly deep here because of time, but the idea in the most prevalent idea in this indictment is they did what?
they engaged in a scheme to influence the results of our election. This scheme, basically, or conspiracy, was just a social media type thing where they came up with a bunch of, stole a bunch of names. That's what they're charging the indictment with. They used PayPal accounts to use social media of Twitter, Facebook, to support or actually go against Hillary, support Bernie and Donald Trump. And there's nothing in the indictment about how successful they were. There are some things that are important. One thing's important. They engaged people here in the United States and at least three campaign people, but they said the campaign people were, quote unquote, unwittingly involved in it. So, but it just lays out the scheme. It should be kind of scary as to what the Russians are capable of, are willing to do. The takeaway, though, to me is this is all about the social media, and they did some other things. We still haven't gotten to hacking into the DNC, the Democratic National Committee emails, and the things they did, the WikiLeaks leaks that they talked about closer to the campaign actually occurring in November of 16.
Would you expect that that's definitely going to come now?
I would think so. I think we talked about this months ago, Steve, that the smartest thing or one of the things we'd like to see Mueller do is actually invite some Russians. So this is kind of the foundation for probably further indictments. There's also some developments over the weekend that Rick Gates, the guy working with Manafort, is in a plea negotiations now. He's probably going to cooperate. He can cooperate against Manafort, who's a former campaign chairman. He can testify against him, but it's not clear yet whether Gates, who stayed a lot longer in the White House, actually has information that might relate to the Russian collusion stuff.
Yeah, and again, collusion is not a crime. It is not a crime to collude, to talk to somebody. It's a political crime. It's not a criminal offense. Having said that, every time I hear Trump or any of his associates say no collusion, no collusion, we've got four people indicted so far, other than the 12 that were indicted on Friday. And in addition to that, we also have Don Jr. having his little tea party at the Trump Tower with four or five others, and a paper trail going back and forth proving that there was collusion going on there. So, of course, there's proof of collusion.
Yeah, he was certainly. He had a lot of business interests in Russia. And if you kind of piece it all together, unwillingness to impose the sanctions, and other things he's doing, you know, which may be completely innocent, but it certainly makes him look like he's covering something up. But again, this indictment just lays the foundation for it. The Russian attempts to interfere with our election, they're true. The intelligence community has been telling us that for a long time. These people have been indicted. Now we can go forward. And they still have to make, and it hasn't been made yet, the nexus between the Russian interference in the Trump campaign.
Here, what do you mean it hasn't been made? What's the point of the...
They haven't criminally made that tie. Criminally, yeah. The intelligence community, Adam Schiff said over the weekend that there's evidence. And the thing that's confusing about us is there's so many investigations. You have the Mueller, which is the criminal, and then you have an intel investigation. The head of the intel thing said that they have evidence that the campaign, quote-unquote, colluded, which, again, got to be conspiring for it to be criminally actionable. But they say that evidence is there, but we haven't seen it yet, so we'll wait and see.
And the president, outside of one tweet this weekend, has still said nothing promoting the investigation, congratulating the investigators, even though Mueller wouldn't need that, or helping move this thing forward. Russia can respond to this in kind in some way. Do you expect they will?
No, but why hasn't our president responded? They had tried to interfere with our democracy, and the only response
it's an act of war.
I think it is. Again, we got to focus on protecting the country, not punishing them. But still, there's been no statement on this. Or the tweets this weekend were all about, see, I told you there's no collusion, which means nothing. So to me, that's more disturbing that he hasn't addressed what the Russians actually did. It's clear what they did here. The indictment reads like a spy novel.
Yeah, so it starts out in 2014. By 2016, they see an opportunity to do as much damage to Clinton as possible, because it's no secret that Vladimir Putin has great dislike for Bill and Hillary Clinton. And he picks Trump and he picks Bernie, as you said, and lays it on. I mean, the common sense would tell you that, of course, they made a difference in the election. But the only people that continue to bring up the election are Donald Trump and his associates. Outside of that, it's this being a criminal investigation. Nobody else is talking about it. They're the ones keeping it alive. So if there's now a reason to bring it up criminally and go forward criminally, well, Trump can thank himself, because he's the one who keeps kicking up the dust about it.
Yeah, I don't know why he won. He had to just take that and focus on being president and making sure this doesn't happen again. Mike Rogers, the head of the House Intel Committee, 3 years ago, I saw him give a speech here.
That's great.
And he talked about just this stuff. this has been going on forever.
Right.
And we need to do something about it.
Yeah, people need to understand how serious this is, what a big deal this is. The two highest, most senior Russian officials, Kislyak and his buddy, the ambassador and the foreign minister, spoke to reporters over the weekend. They were quoting Donald Trump and Mike Pence. I mean, that should disturb you greatly, that the Russians' excuse is quoting our president and vice president. Look what they said. Of course we're innocent.
Yeah, it's President's Day. We're a long way from George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, don't you think?
Amazing. Andrea, last word.
Pat, I was just going to tell you what was coming up at 7:30. That's it.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I thought you were pointing at me before.
Pat wants to know as well. Tell him. And thank you, Pat Brady.
See you guys. Have a good week.
See you later.
Thank you.
Hey, I know an Olympian.
Do you?
I know him.
Do you really?
Come on. You don't know any Olympians.
Well, I mean, I kind of know an Olympian.
Sure you do.
Okay, well, maybe not.
I know an Olympian.
Well, nice job, Amy Cochran. She's bringing it with her Evan Lysacek story.
Love that.
Oh, and Sandberg, remind me, we got to get David Most, Dr. Most's brother on. He knows a whole slew of Olympians. What Olympians do you know? 312-981-7200. That's the number. Text in. And make up a story if you don't have one. Maybe you were there when Bruce Jenner decided he didn't want to be Bruce Jenner anymore. I mean, any story you have.
I met some famous curlers over the weekend.
Yeah, you did curling thing. When was that?
I did curling yesterday at the Chicago Curling Club for WGN-TV. It was fun. It's very challenging.
No, that's not what you told me off the air. Off the air, you told me that it wasn't that exciting.
It wasn't as exciting as like a ski jump or
did
a luge.
Did you do both sides?
It wasn't scary, but I did. Yeah,
so you were
both sides of the ice.
You were a slider and a sweeper?
Yes. I didn't sweep very well. It's hard to sweep.
Well, sweeping's easier.
No, you need more balance for sliding, but sweeping, you have to get, you can't touch the stone, which I learned, because I'm trying to push the stone.
Don't touch the stone.
They yell, sweep, 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 or they yell, stop, stop, stop.
Mm-hmm.
I get stop a lot. Stop, stand there. And
do you understand how the game is scored?
Now I do.
Okay. Dave, let me explain curling to you.
Mm-hmm.
When they refer to the house, that is the target. The button is the center of the target. The key in each end is to try to be the closest to the target and the button specifically by the time your 8 stones are thrown.
How do you know all
this?
Like
shuffleboard.
It's kind of like bags.
Yeah, and bags.
Yeah.
Not really, because really. I asked him that. Is it like shuffleboard on ice? And he said no.
Not really. Mm-hmm. No. Because you have to have strategy to knock out your other team's stones.
Yes.
You're on ice.
When you have your chance to throw.
I would compare it most to maybe bocce, bocce ball, except there's not the tiny little ball in the middle.
And then
it's a bullseye.
I think I'm right about this. The last person to throw, the last team to throw,
to slide.
They're referred to as having the hammer. You got the hammer. In the 10th, you got the hammer.
And what's it called if you inadvertently touch the stone with the broom?
Stupid.
Bad luck.
It's now a burned stone.
Oh, yeah. See, I didn't know that.
See?
That's good.
I was going to say, and I didn't, I got swept away in it all. But it was very cool to learn.
See, here's the thing. You actually did say it. You just did say it out loud.
Not if you said it. Probably shouldn't have said it.
And how heavy are those stones, Andrea?
48 pounds.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How many did you lift?
None.
You should see the concessions at the Olympics when the kids went, I want a stone, Mommy! Who's going to carry it back to the United States?
They have training stones, and those are, I think, 38 pounds. They're heavy.
Yeah,
well, do they have stone bags, like bowling bags?
Yeah.
They must have.
They do, and they have special shoes.
Yeah, sliding shoes.
I like the shoes.
With Teflon on the bottom, so you slide all over the place.
Those are cool shoes.
Super cool. And the stone is made in Scotland.
We have a few people who claim they know an Olympian.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, can you still see that piece online? WGNTV.com.
Yeah, WGNTV.com.
Let me see if these people truly do know an Olympian before we get to a really, really different version of the anthem that came up this weekend at the NBA All-Star Game. Cindy's in Elmhurst. Do you kind of know an Olympian?
I do. In 1980, there was a black gymnast named Gilmore from Iowa State that I knew the gymnastic team, and he made the team. And he didn't get to compete because that was the year we boycotted Russia. He was also Ron Gilmore's son, the Chicago Bear.
Oh, and how did you know him? You went to school with him?
I dated one of the members of the gymnastics team, and he was on it.
Look at you.
Yep.
Did you end up marrying the guy?
I did not end up marrying the guy, no.
What happened? Why'd you break up?
College fling. He was too little.
Well, we'll leave that alone. Thank you for calling.
That's awesome.
Give everybody something from the prize list. Hang on, callers. Karen.
Yes, yes.
You kind of know an Olympian.
Yes, I kind of do. Back in 1968, we were at the Wagon Wheel Resort out in Rockton, Illinois, and they have an indoor ice skating rink.
Okay.
And Janet Lynn was there, and they were taking her publicity shots, and she was doing all these different axles and all these kind of things.
Twizzles and swizzles.
I fell down, and a woman ran over the top of my hand with her skate. My hand went, you know, split open, blood flying everywhere. I walked into the adjacent ice cream shop telling my mother I just met Janet Lynn and there was blood flying all over the place. It was kind of a memorable moment.
Sounds fantastic. All right. Hold on. And by the way, I don't want to add to the story, but she did lose the hand. No, I don't know.
No.
Steve, the limo driver, you kind of know an Olympian?
Hey, good morning. Yeah, hey. I'm usually on Nick's show.
This is a Nick show. Steve, what do you got for me, buddy?
Portage Park Pool. Mark Spitz used to be used to do training there.
Come on.
And my grandma used to live right there, and I used to go swimming in that pool all the time. So I swam in the same water that Mark Spitz did like ten years later.
That is tremendous, Steve. It's almost like you're the same guy. Let's see if I've got this one right. Is it Varsi?
Yes, sir.
Where's the name like Varsi come from?
Well, it's short for a longer Armenian name. My father was Armenian.
Tell me the longer Armenian name.
Varsenig. V-A-R-S-E-N-I-G.
Sounds like a poison. Oh, we'll have to test him for Varsenig.
Exactly. That's why my friends called me Arsenig in Old Lace. That's right.
All right, Varsi, you kind of know an Olympian.
I kind of know an Olympian. I have a friend whose Canadian cousin, Caitlin Laws, is an Olympic curler and won a medal.
Very nice.
I probably know him.
Yeah, because Andrea did a curling story for Channel 9 yesterday. So it's almost a Varsi like you and Andrea are cousins.
It's like we're gold medalists, Varsi.
We are. The Greeks and the Armenians were sticking together.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yep. Hold on.
Yasu.
One more. Yasu to you. Charlie's in Joliet. Yeah, Charlie.
Yeah, I knew an Olympian, and matter of fact, I swam in the same pool that Spitz swam in over at Portage Park.
Oh, wait, do you know Steve the limo driver?
No, not really. I don't. Maybe by his last name, but Portage Park is a pretty big...
I could see, Charlie, you and Steve doing a synchronized swimming team.
There you go. Now you're talking.
That's right. That's it. That's it.
Or ice dancing.
Prizes for everybody. All right, before we get to the headlines... hey, Joe, give me, you got Fergie? Okay,
yep,
never mind. All right, never mind, Joe. Keep doing the work you're doing. Fergie at the NBA All-Star Game. Now, you know my policy on this. I don't stop the anthem. Okay, so once the anthem plays, we just reverentially sit back and enjoy it.
Listen.
See what you think. This is Fergie at the NBA All-Star Game.
And this is going to take a while.
Without judgment. Listen.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hail at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming. Staying in air,
Wow. Listen, I didn't hate it. I thought she was going Marilyn Monroe, happy birthday, JFK, there in the beginning.
It was at the beginning. It grew on me.
Yeah. I kind of liked it.
Yeah. Jazzy. Jazzy.
Didn't work for you, huh?
Not so much. I like the traditional Jim Cornelison anthem, I think.
Making love to America,
yes.
Right there.
There you go.
Charles Barkley said he needed a cigarette. Shaq said he loved it. So
yeah. Well, she's Fergie.
She's awesome. She's got a great voice.
But I didn't see that coming. Now, I remind you, when Marvin Gaye sang the anthem in what, 90, 89, 90, 91, somewhere in there?
Sometime around that.
A lot of people hated it.
Oh, yeah.
It's iconic now. Everybody loves it. And he did kind of a funky, jazzed up version of the anthem. So she belted it out.
She sure did. That she did.
I'm going to need a minute. We'll take a break, come back. Headlines next, 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
744, the Steve Cochran Show continues. We need the sanctions voted on by Congress to be implemented yesterday. But the president's busy tweeting about Oprah Winfrey and Maria Bartiromo this morning after a tweet-heavy weekend that was, it wasn't just offensive, it was insane. Ryan Nobles joins us from CNN. My words, not yours, as always. Good morning, Ryan.
Steve, good morning to you. Happy President's Day.
And to you. By the way, did you know that Grover Cleveland was the only president in history to hold the job of hangman?
I did not know that.
Yeah, and he had to pull the trap twice. He was a hangman in Erie County.
That's incredible.
Did you know the S in Harry S. Truman doesn't stand for anything?
That I knew.
No, I did not know that either.
Yeah, see, I'm just filled with vital information.
I was going to say, I always wondered if President's Day is like Father's Day. If you're a president of the United States, everyone take care of you. You know, you get whatever you want to eat that night.
All I want to do is just have a day to myself where I don't have to sign any bills. That's you sitting around. Yeah, you know, exactly. It's a little different. Yeah. All right. So what's developing on the Hill and what's developing in D.C. this morning?
Well, I think the big question that we have going into this week, and Congress is out of session, so we probably won't have a substantive answer on this until they return. But is this finally the turning point when it comes to a conversation about gun control? The reaction, particularly from the students that were the victims in this horrific shooting in Florida, their message seems to be resonating. And already this morning, the White House put out a statement by the deputy press secretary that says that the president is open to a discussion on improving the federal background check system. You're seeing other Republicans in Congress that seem to recognize the gravity of what happened here and how this just cannot continually be a story that dominates the headlines in the United States, that there are too many young people that are dying just because they went to school. And, you know, we saw this after Las Vegas. There was this talk about banning bump stock that never happened. But the question now is, could this be the turning point where there actually is some sort of substantive conversation between Republicans and Democrats about some sort of change to the gun laws in the United States? And it's really led by Donald Trump. If he's willing to kind of break down that barrier, that could open the floodgates, and we'll have to see how the gun lobby reacts.
I tweeted this out this weekend, but the bump stock conversation happened after Vegas, and even the NRA was in, and nothing happened. Assault weapons ban was in place until just a few years ago when it sunsetted. And the assault weapons ban, the argument here against that now as well, a lot of people call it assault weapons, not an assault weapon. Do me a favor. Right. Stop making excuses. Classify it and let's move forward, because almost every mass shooting involves an assault weapon or assault style weapon. Banning sales to the violent and mentally ill, Newtown immediately comes to mind, as well as others. And you restrict clip size and limit ammunition purchases. That's almost all mass shootings, because sadly, Ryan, as you know, nothing's going to cure it all, but that can't be an excuse to do nothing.
Exactly, Steve. And that's where we always get I think, caught up in this conversation where, you know, Republicans and Democrats are obviously, you know, light years apart from each other when it comes to this issue. So one side will come to the table with some sort of a common sense reform, and the other side will say, well, that wouldn't have solved this problem, so it's not worth it at all. So, you know, you don't want, really want to address the kind of really wholesale radical reforms that might prevent something like this from happening. So we just don't do anything at all. And I think that we finally maybe have reached a point where the American people, you know, the average everyday American person is just sick and tired of this and is like, what are you going to do? You know, the Second Amendment is an important part of the United States Constitution, but there's got to be some wiggle room here where we can at least try and make it a lot more difficult for an 18-year-old kid with mental health problems to be able to buy a rifle that he can take into a school and just kill that many people indiscriminately. And the pressure has really got to come from the average American, because obviously the lobbyists have entrenched their positions here and they've got their lock hold into these members of Congress. But if it starts to impact people at the voting booth, maybe that's when you're going to start to see a change. And, you know, do you get the sense that there's a concern here that they, you know, Marco Rubio has started to change his tune a little bit? Corbello from Florida, who's also, he doesn't represent the district where the shooting happened, but he's close by. He said that he's open to a ban on gun purchases to people under the age of 21. You're starting to see the ice crack here. Whether or not to actually see some substantive change, we're going to have to wait and see.
I think you're right with that. We are starting to see the ice crack. Is that what it would take, though, Ryan, a GOP-introduced bill, not just bipartisan, but a GOP-introduced bill, maybe just something as simple as banning assault weapons to the public, keep them, obviously, for military and police and that sort of thing. But I can't imagine anyone who wouldn't, even staunch supporters of the Second Amendment, who wouldn't get behind that.
Well, the assault weapon ban has been one of the biggest stumbling blocks. I mean, the NRA has fought that tooth and nail when they repealed that law in the 90s. That's been one of the big things.
It's a major, major moneymaker. Huge moneymaker.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't even know if we can go that far. I mean, we'll go back to bump stocks, right? I mean, you talk to average everyday people, and you talk to average everyday members of Congress, and you ask them, are you in favor of a ban on bump stocks? They almost all say yes. But something gets in the way of it, of the legislation actually getting put into law and actually getting passed. There's always some sort of stumbling block along the way every single time.
Yeah, and here's the thing, because they count on the rest of us losing interest or moving on to the next news cycle. Well, the NRA behind closed doors said, yeah, well, I said it. We didn't want bump stocks. That's not what I meant. And then the money train and the lobby train continues. Here's the difference this time. These kids are involved. There are high schools all over Illinois who are organizing now. There's high schools all over the country who are organizing for a massive march. When these cowards in Congress see kids marching in the street, oh, they'll do something then.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't agree more, Steve. I mean, how many of us were not? I mean, there was a period of time where I watched that speech given by Emma Gonzalez, I believe her name is, the young girl who's kind of become the spokesperson for this group, and not having anything to do with the actual substance of what she had to say, but just her passion. And as a father of two young daughters, I have to say that the tears were welling up in my eyes.
Same here.
First of all, the idea that this poor girl, who's really still a baby, she should not have had to deal with this awful tragedy, to see her with that poise and kind of that bravery to stand up and call out the President of the United States and say, you need to do something about this. I mean, I tell you what, it struck a chord in my heart. And so how could you not be a member of Congress and hear from these young people who did nothing but show up to school and ended up in a killing zone? How do you not listen to them and say, man, we've got to do something? And the thing about young people is they don't give up.
Right.
You know, when they see something that they think needs to be changed and they're this deeply connected to it, they're going to march on Washington. They're going to make phone calls. They're going to get involved. And guess what? A lot of these kids are going to be voters in 2020. You know, their voices cannot be denied. And maybe that is the difference here. Maybe the fact that they've been able to, I mean, I just can't, I'm just blown away by how eloquent.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Are.
We were saying that this morning, Ryan. They're so fluent and they're so poignant. And one after the other just had such great comments and statements today, especially the one saying, please don't be worried about rainbow wedding cakes. Worry about our safety. And then they went on to do a story about how they're going to be buying Teflon backpacks now.
Yeah, I mean, because because that's what kids ought to be worried about when they go to school. It's right. Ridiculous. And by the way, let's also throw out the argument that they're coming to take our guns. Congress can't agree to keep the government open. You think they could come to an agreement to overturn an amendment to the Constitution? Get over it.
Look at how they handle immigration. You know, it's the same exact thing. You know, they do a lot of yelling at each other, but the idea that they could put something substantive on the table to get something done is just, I don't know.
Ridiculous.
It's just a, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Stand by. Well, I want to ask you before we run out of time about Russia and the indictments on Friday. More with Ryan Nobles from CNN coming up. Follow him on social media. Talking with Ryan Nobles. Steve Cochran's show continues. Ryan Nobles from CNN. All right. 12 Russians indicted. 3 Russian companies brought up criminally as well. What is the murmur? What is the talk in Washington this morning?
Well, you saw at the end of the week the president attempt to try and spin this as an indication that he himself had nothing to do with Russia's interference in the election and that these indictments actually vindicated him. But what we're being told, our White House team, from people that have had conversations with the president over the weekend, is that he's actually watched the coverage of these indictments and now is not as convinced that it's a clear vindication for him, and he's angry about it.
Thank you, Einstein.
And so, you know, I think that what more than anything, what this does is it shows us that the president has a group of people around him that, in many respects, tell him what he wants to hear. And they understand that in order to keep him stable and kind of focused on the things that he needs to be focused on as president, they need to keep this Russia situation out of his orbit. And so they try to explain to him that, you know, and they keep pushing back to this comment that Rosenstein made when he released the indictments, that there are no Americans that are directly connected to these particular indictments, as an indication that he has nothing to worry about. But in reality, this has nothing to do with the ongoing investigation, and that there are certainly the possibility that other people could be brought into this, including the president or the people close to him. So he saw the coverage over the weekend. It's making him concerned again. I think that you're going to continue to see him try and push back on this and try and spin this idea that he's had nothing to do with this. And then the other thing, too, is he still continues to refuse to come out and definitively talk about Russia's role in attempting to mess with the election in 2016, because he is still so he has kind of this complex about it having something to do with the legitimacy of his victory. And I think that's still a problem for him. And, you know, and when you have that and you add in the fact that he has yet to implement the sanctions, he still continues to say nice things about Vladimir Putin. That's where you start to see these concerns about exactly what role he may have played in this Russian interference back in 2016.
That's really the summation, because the deal is, if you go, well, nothing happened until the election and all of this stuff with Russia is just ridiculous. Well, then why did he look in the camera as a candidate and say, Russia, if you're listening, why did he go on with Lester Holt and say, I got rid of the FBI director to end the investigation? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, he's never, ever, ever gone after Putin, ever.
And this is, this isn't a surprise, but, you know, they're cherry picking parts of the indictment as a way to say that, you know, this shows that the campaign had nothing to do with it and that nobody should worry about it, because the bulk of the actual physical ad spending happened after the election. Well, that, you know, totally ignores the fact that the indictment clearly states that the actual, you know, the effort by bots to go in there and post on Facebook and post on Twitter, not through actual political advertising, not paid political advertising, that all happened before the election.
Right.
So you can't take one thing and then ignore the other thing. So the idea that they decided to start spending money after the election was over because they realized that this was working, that they were sowing discord and it was making things difficult for the United States government to function effectively. But you can't ignore everything that happened before the election, and that's clearly outlined in the document. And it also tells us that Robert Mueller is, again, just in the midst of this investigation. It's not over by a long shot.
It's our friend Ryan Nobles from CNN. He'll be busy today. It's President's Day. By the way, did you know Lincoln logs are named after Abraham Lincoln?
I think I did know that. I think I did know that. I at least assumed that. Maybe I shouldn't say that I definitively knew that. I at least assumed it.
You know, Andrew Johnson was the only tailor ever to be president, and he made his own suits even after he was president.
That's frugal. That's economic. That's very smart.
Listen, I'm a font of information. Thank you, my friend.
All right, guys. Have a great, great President's Day.
Thank you. Happy President's Day. We'll come back with the news in a moment. Then Dean, 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me, kiss me.
Live from Channel 9's newsroom, here's our friend Dean. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
I understand you saw Sandberg out at dinner last night.
I was at the wonderful Sistaria Greek restaurant on Toohey Avenue in Lincolnwood last night.
Very popular place.
Very, very, very popular, in you know, waiting in line. And
you caught Sandberg and Pat doing a dine and dash? They didn't pay their bill. They just ran out.
I had never seen this before. They were actually walking through this crowded restaurant, eating food off of other people's plates.
They BYOF, bring your own fork.
Yeah,
not surprised.
Just walking around. Nice surprise. What did you have last night, Mary?
Sandberg, what did you have last night to eat? She's putting on headphones right now.
So we got our food to go. I had what I always call the Greek salad with chicken, but whenever we order it, they always correct us and just say the salad with chicken.
The salad. It's the salad.
It's a Greek restaurant, so they don't call it a Greek salad.
Shut up and eat the salad.
What'd Pat have?
Pat had the same thing, and then we had grilled octopus.
Pat eats like a girl.
He does. We had grilled octopus, and then that lemon rice soup.
Ooh, avgo lemon.
Yep.
Yeah.
Egg lemon soup.
He got the egg lemon, sorry. And
what's
he got
it called? Avgo lemon. It sounds like a floor polish.
Avgo, egg, and then lemon. Oh, it's lemon. Okay. Egg lemon soup.
And then Pat had the seafood soup as well.
Yum.
And the bread is delicious.
It's part of our regular feature. What did Sandberg and Pat eat? We do it every day at the show.
Yep. That's what we had, and we ate that while we watched Homeland.
Nice. Oh,
what a lovely evening.
Nice. I had the lamb chops.
Oh, those are good. I don't know if they travel as well, so we have not gotten those to go.
It's better when they're right off of the grill.
Yeah.
Have you ever had Greek lamb chops before, Dean? Is that your first time?
That was my first time having Greek food.
Yeah, that's one.
I've been calling that restaurant, just so you know, Pastoria.
That's what a lot of people say, because that's what it looks like.
Until Andrea said it this morning.
That's what it looks like.
The BAFTA Awards, Kate Middleton's outfit, Jamie Foxx walked off an interview, Black Panther is as good as Dean says it was, and Emma Watson gave away a lot of her own money coming up. But Dean, I have fascinating presidential fun facts for President's Day.
Today is President's Day, yeah.
James Abram Garfield, first president to ever talk on the phone.
Really?
Yeah, he talked to Alexander Graham Bell. You know what he said? can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? No, he actually said, please speak a little more slowly. How about that? The first phone call and it's a bad connection. Uh-huh. Hey, dude, can you call me back? Line's breaking up.
We have a bad signal.
Did you know 29th President Warren Harding...
You don't hear a lot of trivia about Warren Harding.
...repeatedly made love to a young intern type in the White House named Nan Britton.
Really?
Their favorite spot was a White House closet. On one occasion, the Secret Service had to stop his wife, the First Lady, from beating down the closet door while they were in there.
Oh my.
Trouble.
So this was a mistress on the side.
Early drama.
Trouble in the White House. By the way, Dean, it's 82 degrees in here. Actually, it's almost 83.
It was very warm in there yesterday when I did my show.
We have never, in 1,090 shows, complained about the heat in here because it's always cold.
There was like a meat locker in here, Dean.
It was very warm in there yesterday. I want to apologize to people who were strolling Michigan Avenue yesterday because I did strip down to my underwear.
Yeah.
Andre Dawson is supposed to come in here in a little bit, and he's fortunately lives in Florida. It'll feel like home.
Oh, good. That's nice.
And did you know President Bush Sr., I think you remember the story, he vomited on the Japanese prime minister. Remember that dinner?
Oh, God, yes.
He got sick, and he had the flu. And a Japanese language slang word is bushusuru.
What does that mean?
Bushusuru. It means the Bush thing. It means to throw up in public.
Pukey. No.
It means pukey McPukington.
He shouldn't have gone to
Bush
work.
Suru.
Should have stayed home from work that day.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. I'll have more fascinating presidential facts soon, Dean.
This is a very educational show here today.
And we'll come back with Dean stuff.
And the weekend's over, but the party's just getting started. The Hawks host the Kings in a primetime clash. Blackhawks, Kings, tonight at 7.
And the living is easy.
On WJT. You've been calling his name.
At 8 o'clock, it was 69 degrees in the studio. At 8:24, it's 86.
Ooh. Some people don't have heat.
Oh, wow.
And normally it's freezing.
Feel free to take some of ours.
Oh.
You know, again, they've been doing a 10th Avenue freeze out for weeks. Now they're trying to heat us out.
And I assume you've called the boiler room downstairs.
The one that doesn't answer? Yes, regularly.
We usually call them because it's freezing in here, Dean, so yeah. Now they hate us even more.
I just feel bad for the guys on the ship that are rowing.
We're almost out of that building anyway, so when it's a
this
mattress
great
store.
Historic building, and you know, we're leaving, not of our choice necessarily. It's a long story, but
it's going to become a mattress store.
This is just a delightful goodbye.
Would you like a nice refreshing iced tea or something?
Yeah, if you could pour it on my head. The BAFTA Awards are very entertaining. This is the British Oscars, right?
Yes, that's correct. And the big winner last night was Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. It won Best British Film, which seemed odd because all of the actors are Americans. It's set in Missouri, obviously.
Why is it called Best British Film?
It's called because it was written and directed by a Brit,
87,
Martin McDonagh, and it was financed by UK TV Channel 4.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So that whole thing was a British production. I didn't know that until today. But it also won Best Movie, Best Screenplay. Frances McDormand won for Best Actress, and Sam Rockwell won for Best. Supporting on the actor's side, not surprisingly, Gary Oldman continues his winning ways. Allison Janney from I, Tonya. And, yeah, so, you know, if this is going to be an indication of the Academy Awards, it's pretty much who's been winning everything all the way during award season.
I'm looking at Kate Middleton's outfit for the BAFTA Awards. Why are people upset about this?
Because if you're looking at the picture, you notice that it's very dark green.
I can't tell from this.
Very, very dark green.
Well, why is dark green a problem?
Dark green is a problem because, like the Golden Globes, they had asked everyone to wear black for the Time's Out movement.
Yeah, this looks black in this picture, but you're saying it's like a dark, dark green.
It's a very dark
olive. Maybe she hadn't picked up her cleaning.
Color. That may be. That may be. It may be that the queen was still at the palace pressing her dress for her.
I'll take care of this. I'll be done in just a moment.
With the ironing.
Oh, you'll have to go in the olive instead.
So people are very upset.
The wheel's on it. I love Pat and Vanna.
Have some spam.
Once again, Dean and Steve's incredible wheel of impressions.
We are so internet. We should really. I'm shocked the United Nations hasn't contacted us.
As an international embarrassment?
Some sort of film of what not to do to offend other people from other countries.
Well, is Kate Middleton going to be okay?
Well, she's taking a lot of grief. She's because you know people are saying she should have participated in the movement. You know, people with the royal family are saying that the royal family rarely gets involved in politics, but people are tweeting this is not about politics, this is about women. So,
Jamie Foxx was being interviewed for the NBA All-Star Game weekend, and he walked off.
Yeah, the NBA All-Star weekend, the celebrity game that they play. He was being interviewed by Michael Smith, who one of Michael Smith's, you know, Jamie Foxx was on the court, you know, like with the headphones on, like we always see. And
because he's about to throw down. He's about to hoop it up.
He was about to hoop it up. And Michael Smith asked him if he had been practicing his basketball with Katie Holmes. who he has been seen with many, many, many times.
They've been dating for years.
They've been dating for a long time. It's the worst kept secret in Hollywood that they're dating.
So why did he walk off?
He just didn't want to answer any questions about Katie Holmes. Took the headphones off. Took his microphone off.
Why wouldn't he just say, dude, I'm not talking away. About my personal life?
Right.
You know, Steve, that's what they like to do. Sometimes they want to make a big scene.
I like Jamie Foxx.
I can't even tell you the number of times where I've had, you know, where I've asked somebody a question and they react poorly or their publicity person reacts poorly.
But that's because they don't like you.
They have some kind of response where I could just, where I've always said, You really couldn't have thought of a one-sentence response?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
You didn't think someone was going to ask you about,
Mel Gibson.
Holmes
Mel Gibson's a perfect example.
Yeah, Mel Gibson didn't do any interviews for like 6 years.
Right.
And then his first interviews, I ask him how he thinks his fans are going to react. And the way that he reacts is by calling me an a-hole instead of having a one-sentence response. It would have, you know, saved us both a lot of grief.
No kidding. Dean, do they tell you ahead of time? Do you get the heads up? Does the publicist say, hey, Jamie Foxx does...
Sometimes they do. I don't know if they did in this case, but often if there is something going on in someone's personal life, they'll say so-and-so doesn't want to talk about blah, blah, blah.
And if it's a reasonable request, sure. It's fine. Otherwise, as a public figure, you're subject to all questions.
Yeah. At the end of the day, we are a news station. I know it's just entertainment, but if it's something of a news value, we're not the publicity arm for these people.
Right.
We are,
right.
You know, I think we have a responsibility to ask important questions.
That's why
it's
I always
just celebrities.
That's
though.
Why I always ask Dean to tell the studios to send me the free stuff that he won't accept.
Right.
Yeah.
So
I have a very nice pillow that looks like the poop emoji.
Yeah, I don't need that. I'm good on that.
I have that right here if you want it.
Totally good.
Abigail's getting older.
Totally good on that.
Be a nice Christmas present.
Emma Watson donated a bunch of money.
She donated $1.4 million.
Woo, that's so generous. Why did she donate that?
She talked like that.
Yeah, she does. Yeah.
Hermione. She donated to the UK Justice and Equality Fund that grants projects in organizations to end the culture of sexual harassment and
good
to help sexual harassment victims. Money where
great.
Her mouth is.
And Dean told you Black Panther was good. How much money did it make?
Took in only $192 million.
Pretty good weekend.
For the 3-day weekend, they're expecting it to take about another $30 million in today. And it broke the record for the biggest opening ever in the month of February. It's like now the number 8 biggest opening of all time of any motion picture. The soundtrack of the motion picture debuted this morning on the Billboard charts, number 1 also. So this is a steamroller.
And ironically, I believe the entire movie, panther free.
That's
not
right.
A single actual panther in the movie.
That's very true. That's very true.
Dean is featuring the National Anthem controversy all morning. We're out of time here to do it. But not only will you get Fergie's National Anthem, you'll get Roseanne's Disaster.
We have Roseanne. We have a whole cavalcade of terrible National Anthems, including Leslie Nielsen's from Naked Gun.
I liked Fergie's National Anthem.
Did you? The jazzy...
Threw me off in the beginning.
A little sultry.
Santa Baby, Happy Birthday, Mr. President
yep,
version.
Yep. I liked it.
Something for everyone.
Thank you.
This is my polite way of saying you're nuts.
That's Dean. That's Dean, and he's not wrong. It's 8:32. We're back with the headlines in just a moment on 720 WGN.
And they're asking for a curtain call as he has just hit number 47. Congratulations all around.
To the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
The Hall of Famer and one of the great legends, not just for your Chicago Cubs, but for Major League Baseball. And just a good guy. I always love seeing you, man. And you look great.
Thank you.
Andre Dawson is here. And we brought in the Florida Heat for you. Hope you like that. And you're here with your friends from Baby Otter. So let me jump over there right away, and then we'll get back to you and talk a little baseball, too. Marlene Bloom. Marlene, tell me about Baby Otter.
Well, Baby Otter has been in existence for over 40 years now, and it started because my daughter had no fear of the water when she was 2. And would...
Were you a swimming family?
No, well, we swam, but, you know, it was nothing big. We didn't go on teams and things like that. But we enjoyed being in the water and being able to swim, knowing the different strokes and whatnot. But she would fall in the water. or just walk into the water and not have to grab her out all the time because she was 2 years old. No one would allow, you know, teach her because she wasn't three yet.
Sure.
So I came up and spent the summer.
Since she's my baby otter, we're gonna do this.
Yeah, that's right. So we spent the summer and came up with this turn, kick, reach program. In 5 days, we're allowed to have a child swim to the steps, kick to the wall, and if they fall in, to be able to turn around and get themselves out.
It's a life skill. It's a very important life skill.
Absolutely.
Andre Dawson, how old were you when you learned how to swim?
I was 49 turning 50.
And what caused you to say this is the time?
Well, I was brought aboard as a spokesperson for Baby Otter.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if I'm going to do this, then I got to be able to get in the water and know how to swim.
Got to be authentic.
Right. Yeah. And with that in mind, I agreed to come aboard. And it's been 13 years now. I probably need to get back in and freshen up my swimming skills. But, you know, I was very excited about the opportunity. And
you got 2 years till the Olympics. So you got time.
Well, I don't want to be that good. I don't want to be Tarzan. But, you know, swimming is something that not only is a good exercise, but it can change your life.
It's a life skill.
Yeah, I remember my goddaughter learning to swim at three. And her mom said if she loved the water so much, you know, with her little floaty, if she could have started earlier, she would have. Which is the cool thing about Baby Otter, because how old can the kids be when they start?
We start them as soon as they're crawling. I mean, as early as 8-9 months.
Wow. Right. And science has shown that they are fully capable of understanding the skill at that age, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's repetition, and there's a naturalness to it. Do we know why? I mean, is it because it simulates a baby in the womb, that kind of free-floating thing?
We believe that's part of it. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, definitely. And they learn, well, we have commands when we teach them, so they know when they hear that command, they have to hold their breath, and they do a phenomenal job.
Yeah.
And what you need to do is don't blow bubbles. Hold your breath, because that keeps you afloat. Your lungs act as a flotation device,
right?
And it keeps you, and allows you to save yourself.
Like teaching a little kid a language,
I know, right?
You know, their brain's not full of other stuff. You can fill it with this.
Yeah.
I remember Brian Gumbel doing a piece on real sports, because this is for everybody, but in particular, African American kids aren't taught to swim. You know, if you grow up in a big city like this, you don't necessarily have access to a pool. Was that your story, or it just never happened for you, Andre?
It's part of it. I didn't have access to a pool. You know, we would go to the beaches. And what really also brought me to where I am today is I almost drowned when I was about 13 years old. I was pushed into a pool, and I didn't really panic. I saw the side of the pool. I kind of worked my way toward the side, and I remember swallowing a lot of water.
And these are kids just goofing around
at a soccer party.
Okay.
And I was able to reach, pull myself to the side. Someone reached and grabbed my arm, and I was able to pull myself out. I never really feared the water, but, you know, I just took that opportunity as, hey, you know, this can be life-changing, and you need to learn how to swim.
Got an announcement coming up about the fine work you guys are doing, and I got Dave in here to talk a little baseball with you as well. But can you hang around for a second, because the temperature's dropping?
Sure.
You need a wrap? You need a light wrap?
Really,
you're not
fine.
Chilly yet, are you? And more with the Hall of Famer, Andre Dawson, in a second as well.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
8:52, the Baby Otter program is coming to Chicago this coming March. The Baby Otter Andre Dawson Aquatic Center is going to develop new swimmers. Babies as young as 8 months old. And the one-of-a-kind kick-turn-reach instructional program at the Weston Lombard at Yorktown Center. And Baby Otter founder Marlene Bloom is here with Andre Dawson. Before we talk baseball, Marlene, lean right into that microphone for me. Mm-hmm. So I guess we need to thank the people at the Weston, right, for being a part of this.
They are. They've signed. We're working with them, and we are going to be here. They want to bring in the community. They are just 100% behind us and wanting to save the lives of children and give them another social means of being able to enjoy themselves.
And what's the website if people want to take a look at what you guys are doing?
It's www.babyotterchicago.com. babyotterchicago.com.
Babyotterchicago.com. And Andre Dawson's here. You talked about why this matters to you, but do you want to throw anything else about the program before we hit you with a couple of baseball questions?
Well, it was, I think, important for me. Chicago has always been like my second home.
Right.
And we came here to promote drowning prevention a number of years ago, and mm-hmm. now to actually have the opportunity to bring the business here and work with the Westin. We're very excited.
Cool.
Well,
for you.
Thankfully, we were just talking about this a little bit off the air, and I couldn't believe it was 31 years. Andre Dawson showed up at Cubs spring training. I remember we were here in these studios thinking about Andre Dawson possibly coming to the Cubs, presented the Cubs with a blank contract, and ended up signing with the Cubs and continued his Hall of Fame career here. And now, here you are 31 years later, and you're back with the Cubs again, right? A little, the joining the Cubs this time a little simpler than it was the last time, right?
Yes, this has been a long time coming. When I retired, it was a dream of mine to come back to the organization. I actually took 3 years off with the hopes of getting a call to come back and work for them. It didn't really work out. The Marlins offered me a job. South Florida was my home. For 15 years, I've been with that organization, and this situation here opened up for me with the change of new management down in Florida, and this is the way I think to close the chapter on my baseball life. I get to come back to Chicago, where I feel I've always belonged.
Andre, I've seen you at the ballpark. I've seen you at restaurants around Wrigleyville. You're so generous with your time. You're always taking pictures and signing autographs. So my question is, when was the last time you got to watch a baseball game, first inning through the ninth inning, completely without anyone coming up to you and taking a picture?
Well, that don't happen too often. I enjoyed it. It's all a part of it. And the fans are actually what make the game itself. So for me, it's exciting to know that, hey, at least they still think about you.
We're excited here, too, because we're now the Chicago White Sox station, and the White Sox got a great young team that sort of reminds us of the Cubs a couple of years ago with these kids that were coming up. And baseball's a kind of sport where anything's possible if you get the right sort of farm system and roots growing. So take me back to the beginning. Who's your mentor? Who's the guy that made it for you, gave you your first big break in baseball?
Well, probably my big first break. I commend the Expos organization. Mel Didier, the late Mel Didier, just passed away last year, saw some ability in me and invited me to a tryout just before a draft down in West Palm Beach. And he said, well, if the cards fall where we hope they will, we will be in touch with you in another week or so. I was all of 20 years old.
20 years old. So you end up signing with the Expos. How much money then? Because that was not a blank contract.
I was drafted in the 11th round. I got a signing bonus of $2,000. They sent the check to my sister. Actually opened the envelope, and she saw that it was $1,500, and she said, we're rich.
It's all the money in the world when it's all the money in the world, right?
Right. So that, I think, was an opportunistic time for me, and I owe a lot to Mel DDA.
The Cub fans, and I count myself among them, obviously, love what you did here, but I also love the statement you made at a time when, I got to be old enough to remember this, but Catfish Hunter was the first free agent that really made big dough. And good for him. And big dough back then, I think he signed for $450,000 or something. $450,000 now is the driver of the third baseman that never gets to play. So it's a different game. But you showed a love for the game and a want to be a part of the Chicago Cubs. I don't know that it's ever been repeated, but I think it's a testament to who you are as a man, and I think it ought to be remembered that way.
Well, I don't think it'll ever happen again. But, for me, I felt that it was the only way I was going to get here.
That was a gutsy move.
Yeah, this was my number one priority. I'd always enjoyed daytime baseball, the city of Chicago, and the fans were tremendous. And after 10 years, I said, well, with pretty much the nucleus of the playoff team still intact, I could be a piece that could add to that. Unfortunately, we finished in last place. But I just said, hey, if this is going to happen, then I can't make monetary demands. I just have to go in and say, hey, pay me what you think I'm worth.
Unselfishness.
I know you were with a different organization in 2016, but where were you for Game 7?
Interesting. I was at home. I actually had a promotion set up to come to Chicago, and I had a 6 a.m. flight after the game. If the Cubs won, if they lost, Kenny Lofton was going to do the appearance for Uber Fanatics in Cleveland. And I didn't really want to pack because I didn't want to jinx them.
Well, of course not.
So I waited until, you know, about the eighth inning. There were two runs up, and I said, they're going to win this game, and let me just throw some things together quick. I go and I pack, and I come back, and the game is tied. And the only thing I could think of was, oh, I jinxed them. Now, you know, we go into extra innings. We have the rain delay. We go into extra innings, and they score the two runs, and now the game is over, and I got to stay up and watch the celebration. Now, I'm thinking about it. I got to get up at 4:30. Well, I was on Eastern time, and it was almost 2 o'clock in the morning. So I watched the celebration. I wind up staying up, going to the airport about a little bit before 5 o'clock, and getting on the plane, getting out to Wrigley Field, and doing the interview with ESPN and starting the promotion right about 9 a.m.
And then he dozed off 10 minutes later. Did you get teary at all?
You know what? I jumped up, and I think I was just as happy, ecstatic as any Chicago Cubs.
If you had made the last out. Right? If you had caught that ball and made the last out, you're probably just as excited because you're part of the story.
I was very proud of those guys because I spoke with Joe Maddon right before they went on the road, and I agreed with them. They needed to get out of Wrigley Field to relax a little bit.
Yeah.
And he assured me, he said, you know what? We're going to win this. I said, I think so. I said, you know, they have no pressure on them now. They're going to go away from home, and I think for everyone that ever put the uniform on, they were very happy.
One of the great series of all time, without a doubt. And the Cubs got it done. And are the Cubs a favorite this year? I haven't looked at the odds.
They're like third choice in the National League behind, you know, the Nationals, Dodgers, and the Cubs.
The
those
usual
three
suspects.
Teams, I think.
Yeah. And what are you going to be doing, what are you doing in spring training?
I'm uncertain as of yet. I think Mr. Ricketts has left that up to Theo, but I will be going down and spending some time there probably in the next 10 days or so.
When was the last time you were in a cage hitting baseballs?
I don't do that anymore. I took about
it's a good way to get
about
hurt.
About 3 years ago, I took about three swings, and my calf started tightening up. My hamstrings were grabbing me. I said, no. Once upon a time.
Favorite swing you ever took? Your favorite one shot at the plate? What was it?
That was here in 1987 when I think I hit my 47th home run. The fans were on their feet. We were about to go on a road trip, and they were calling for a home run. Now, that's pressure. But I worked the count to 3-1, and then I was able to hit a changeup out onto the street over the left field bleachers. And
that's the clip you played, wasn't it, Joe? Didn't you play 47?
Yeah.
Give me that one more time. You got 47 teed up? Let me hear 47. Here you go. When you're ready. We're waking up Harry right now.
Thing of beauty.
Was it Harry?
It wasn't Harry.
No, it wasn't Harry.
Call.
It was 84.
Yeah. No, it was 87.
Or 87, it was 47.
But it was
87.
I remember it was a Sunday afternoon, right? Late in the season.
Yes.
So.
All right, hit it.
And they're asking for a curtain call as he has just hit number 47. Congratulations all around for Dawson.
Just a piece of it there. Good memories, though, huh?
Oh, absolutely.
Great seeing you guys, and congratulations on the Baby Otter program. You've really done an important thing here. I hope you're proud of yourself.
We're very proud, and we're so excited to be here with Andre in Chicago.
And all your kids turned out to be good swimmers?
They are, yes.
Safe trip back, and Andre, great to see you. Have fun in Arizona.
Gotcha.
Right, thank you. All the best.
Thank you.
We'll take a break, come back. CLTV on the air, and back at 720 WGN next.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
This was the love theme from Justin Kaufman's show. And it's a killer, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Justin Kaufman's here. Nightly.
That's because I'm always killing talk radio at night.
Killing it.
Killing it.
And he brought a celebrity guest, too.
Who's your celebrity guest?
This is my son, Miles. It's President's Day, so we decided to play hooky.
Miles,
or you have the day off, right?
Yeah, I have the day off.
Good morning, Miles. How are you?
I'm doing great because, like, it's just a day off, and who doesn't want a day off?
Amen to that, buddy.
How are you?
What grade are you in now?
Fifth.
Fifth grade. So you were 10 years old or 11?
10.
What are you going to be when you grow up?
I don't know.
I need an answer.
You can say more than one thing.
I won't hold you to it. You know.
Yeah, it's not like a test.
Like maybe a teacher or a video game designer or an actor.
What if you taught video game design to actors? Huh?
How about that? That would be great.
Steve Cochran making dreams come true.
That's what I'm talking about.
Right?
Justin, since it's President's Day, I have important presidential facts.
Yes,
both
I'm ready
of
to
you.
Go.
Six presidents are named James. Name them.
Okay. James Monroe.
Monroe.
James... I was going to say James
That's
Taylor.
One.
I was
going to say that's one. You got one so far.
Jimmy Carter would be
Jimmy
James.
Jimmy Carter's two.
James.
Would you like help? Would you like to phone a friend?
Yeah, phone a friend. Polk.
The madhouse
James
on
Madison.
Polk.
Yeah.
Madison. Yeah. Two more.
Okay. So James Buchanan.
Very good.
And then James.
Think cat.
James. Cat.
Cat likes
Big cat.
Pizza.
Like James
like
Big
what?
Cat Williams?
Yeah.
James Garfield.
Garfield. Oh, man. Odie.
So close. We had $1 million for you.
I thought you were going to say conservatory.
You know what's really funny is that I was really good at social studies when I was a kid. I was taking the 8th grade chess when I was in 5th grade. This one, not so much. He's rebelling.
You don't like social studies?
You got a B in social studies.
A B's fine.
You'd think in your day, Steve, a B was fine, but this is now the competitive world of
CBS. Him in the show business.
Well, at least I got a B in the last quarter, but the literal night of that report card, we went to a meeting for the test scores, and it said that it has to make up by the end of the year. And I got a 50 out of 50 on my new project.
Right on. He's
rebounding. That's a rebound.
Right on. I won't have you heckle my man, Miles.
Thank you.
I got your back, Miles.
He hasn't gotten to the point where, like, my dad would give me, when I would get a unsatisfactory grade, my dad would give me the lecture. And it was a good 25-minute lecture that he would just do over and over and over. So when we got to high school and it was getting bad for me, it was just like, I don't really, I'm going to do my homework because I don't want to deal with this lecture.
See, I got more of it. Yeah, so?
Yeah, I still didn't do it.
Yeah.
It always starts out bad when he says, well, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed.
Yeah. Do what has to be done. That was the...
Can you name the only president who was a licensed bartender? Miles? No, I'm kidding.
Licensed bartender. Well, I know Grant was a boozer, but
yeah,
he was a
that's
general.
A drinker. That's the other side of the bar.
Yeah, the other side.
Licensed bartender. Actually owned a bar.
Okay, so I'm assuming... I don't know.
I would
say Woodrow Wilson.
Woodrow Wilson is incorrect. No, I understand he enjoyed some booze.
Truman.
Truman? No. You thought the S in Truman actually standed for booths?
No, I knew it didn't stand for anything.
Dave, you got anything? No, it's incorrect. Abraham Lincoln.
Oh. Lincoln's, right. We should know Lincoln's Bar and Grill.
Barry and...
That's right, yeah.
Barry and Lincoln. Barry and Lincoln was his bar in Springfield.
Wow.
Okay.
And he used to tell the regulars he was going to be president someday. Like, whatever.
I guess it's a great training ground to be president.
Yeah.
You just listen to everybody's problems, right? And you're like,
you imagine
well,
the drinking going on in Washington.
You listen to their problems, you ignore them, and you say, what else can I get you?
Right. Pay up.
Be president.
Pay up. You owe a nickel. Justin, you want to plug some on the show?
Yes. WeWork doing the big happy hour, download happy hour live in front of an audience on Wednesday, 5 to 6:30 at the WeWork Kinsey right here across, right here on Kinsey and State Street. Up on the 17th floor, go to WGNradio.com/events. You have to RSVP, but it's free. And there's free food and free drink. And it's a show in front of a live audience. You're going to have guests, the whole thing.
Miles is going to tell us what he's learned in the Olympics.
Yeah.
Coming up from watching the Olympics. Not yet, Miles. Hold on, buddy. Hold on. Tweet it out. I'll get back to you in a second.
Yeah, just tweet it.
It's
tweeting is the best communication. It's not talking is never a thing. Talking
it's not?
Was never a thing.
Now is that how you communicate with your father? Just through Twitter?
Yeah, we just tweet all the time.
Something that makes sense.
Do you text or just tweet?
We barely text. We just tweet.
Tweeters.
Can't wait for that day to happen.
You excited about the White Sox?
Yes, I am, because that means that like the White Sox like play like more often than the Blackhawks.
More often here.
Yeah, more often here.
How about this? Free tickets from your dad.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Mm-hmm. No more dipping into the allowance, Miles.
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about. All right, buddy, hold on. We'll come back in just a second. It's 9:21. Justin Kaufman's here.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
President's Day, Herbert Hoover gave his White House servants strict orders to hide from him whenever he passed by. It's a lot like your show, where you tell Pete not to look you right in the eyes.
No, I can't. No eye contact. No direct eye contact. Yeah. You can do a side eye, but not direct.
Dave, you want to plug the Fight for Air Club?
Yeah, it's coming up.
Is Justin going to be on your team?
I don't know. You've done it before.
I have. The problem I have right now is that I may be out of town. But I have done it. I'm not intimidated by it. I can tell you from experience, it's one of the best things I've ever done in my life.
It's fun, isn't it?
It's so fun, and it's so rewarding. When you're done, you feel like you accomplished something.
You really do.
It's coming. An amazing experience.
Sunday, March 11th at the Presidential Towers in Chicago, the Fight for Air Climb to benefit the Lung Association, and it's presented by United Healthcare. You can climb any or all four towers.
We can't climb just one step.
No.
Like, we just climb one step.
And you also can't just pick a tower. You could climb the first one and then call it, or you can climb two or climb all four.
How about half a tower?
And Justin, you know what I'm doing, right?
What are you doing?
Four elevators.
Yeah, you could do that.
And at the end, on the fourth elevator, I'm giving a check.
Wait, don't sell yourself short. You're going to give my check, too.
I got to stretch if I'm going to do that.
You got two checks you're bringing up.
Fightforairclimb.org for more information or to donate.
Fascinating presidential fun facts. You know Teddy Roosevelt?
Yeah,
every member of Teddy Roosevelt's family owns stilts.
Come on.
Every single member owns stilts.
Have you ever been on stilts?
No.
Me neither.
No.
Just curious.
There was a unicyclist at halftime of the Northwestern Michigan State game.
Famous.
I believe
Red Panda.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I believe she's the reason it went badly for Northwestern in the second half.
I don't know.
I saw on Twitter that the Northwestern were blowing out Michigan State.
I was there.
I'm definitely going to go check this out. So I checked in about 18 minutes in the second half. And I was like, this is a...
Dave and I believe we got to the bottom of this, as Dave described, a defective basket on one end.
It felt that way.
Didn't work for Michigan State. Didn't work for Northwestern. So, what do you do? You got a game tonight, don't you?
Maryland at Allstate Arena. Hopefully they've replaced that basket since Saturday.
So, 9:28, your buddy Miles is here. Yeah. Our buddy Miles. It's actually your son. All right, Miles, you got some Olympic lessons for us?
Yep.
All right, what'd you learn?
Well, I learned that figure skating is, like, awesome, and it's very elegant.
Oh, you didn't know that before?
Well, I kind of... It was like half and half.
Well, last Winter Olympics, really you were six.
Yeah, last Winter Olympics, you were six. And this would be the one. I've been trying, Steve. I've been trying to get him into Olympics across the board. And he and his mother are not interested.
What about curling? You like curling?
Curling?
Yeah.
I tried curling.
What is curling?
Curling is where they take the big disc thing with a handle. It's called a stone. Yeah. And they slide it down the ice and they try to get it to land on the bullseye.
Yeah. I did it on Sunday.
That sounds cool.
It was kind of cool.
Did you hear that one of the Russian curlers has been...
Doped.
Oh, yeah.
But doping and curling.
Wait, but did you hear the explanation? They said that they don't think he was doping, that he was drugged. That he went to someone in the
spiked.
Olympic Village. Yep.
Absolutely. One of those curling controversies you hear about all the time. All right, what else did you learn?
Well, I learned that if, like, in the Winter Olympics, like, I was like, oh, what's that, in the figure skating, what's that thing, like, with the just the Olympic symbol? Oh, that's Russia. Well, why doesn't it have the Russia flag?
So here you go. Yeah. Here you go. This is a lesson as to whether or not, you know, breaking the rules is a good idea. And as you know, Miles, they broke the rules, so they couldn't use, they couldn't represent their country.
Mm-hmm. They had to represent just the Olympics.
Yeah, how about that? And what is that? What have you learned from that? Don't dope.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Drugs not hug, or hugs not drugs.
That's right. Drugs not hugs would be wrong. Yes, nice job, Miles.
Not the best way to flip that, but yeah, you got it.
He corrected himself.
I messed up big time.
No, you caught it. You caught it. You did great.
You did great.
What's your favorite thing to watch then? Is it figure skating or something else?
Which was your favorite figure skater?
Nathan Chen.
Yeah, he was great. He did bad, and then he came back and he did great. Yeah. Six quads, guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, six quads. It was like a downfall. But then he just came up like six levels.
I can spin around that many times on the ground. But then I get dizzy and I fall. Like after my fourth quad, I get dizzy and I fall down.
It's called a twizzle.
Well, maybe. I don't know. It's called I fell down.
Yeah, and you're on your rear end when you're doing it.
By the way, I think I'm kind of liking the Shibs now.
I beg your pardon?
The brother-sister figure skating team.
I didn't know that was a it's ice dancing, right?
Yeah.
I watched ice dancing last night. And I got to say, without the twists and or the spins and the quads, I'm not that interested.
I agree. I like the ice dancing better now.
I like the music.
I want ice chicken dancing. You know, the chicken dance for a wedding?
That would be your song, Miles, right? If you were doing
there you go, Miles. Miles getting it done. All right, you guys, hang around. We have to learn more from Miles coming up. Justin, when are you on the air again?
7 to 11, Monday through Friday, when sports is not on.
And you feel that Roe is dragging you down?
He is. I'm going to say that off air, but I'll say it on air. Roe is just always dragging me down.
Tough lead-in. We'll come back at headlines next. Gasp. Get headlines next at 720 WGN.
Obviously, you're not a golfer.
It's warm enough to play
today. Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
It's a little damp. Not going to get a lot of roll. Your carry distance will matter more. And joining us in studio with something shiny is Jackie Ensley. Jackie is the 2018 Championship Director of Note. Of what championship?
The KPMG Women's PGA Championship.
That makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely.
Being played where?
It will be played this summer at Kemper Lakes Golf Club.
Great course. Left many golf balls there.
Yeah.
ticket information and general information and all that, where do you go?
Yep, general information you can find online at kpmgwomenspga.com, as well as at the golf show this weekend. We'll have more additional information.
You're going to have the trophy at the golf show?
We absolutely will.
So people can take pictures with it?
Definitely.
This may be the largest trophy I've seen on the women's tour. Is it the biggest?
I believe it's one of the biggest, yes.
It's pretty big.
It's a beautiful trophy.
Thank you. We just shined it for you guys.
Yeah. I'm happy women's golf is getting the recognition now that it probably should have been getting for many, many years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have wonderful players on the tour globally, so we're definitely taking off and heading in the right direction.
Don't you think Annika Sorenstam, to me, was the crossing over point?
Yes.
And since then, it's been a pretty steady stream of respect, I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. The respect that they've... they've much deserved. So we're very excited for the championship.
Yeah, you tell me I can't enter.
No.
Unfortunately, I don't know if your golf score is good enough.
But. 10 handicap, no good.
iGolf, Mary Sandberg golfs, our producer. I mean, we see at least more young girls either through first tee or learning to golf. Are you seeing that as well, too? It wasn't offered in our high school.
Absolutely.
And now it is everywhere.
Same with me. I think nowadays we're seeing more programs like that develop. So we're seeing the game advance for young girls. They have many more opportunities nowadays than they did. So that's definitely leading to more women players or female players on the tour.
Dates of the tournament are when?
The dates are June 26th through July 1st.
It's going to be a great week.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we're hoping.
Justin, you don't golf, do you?
I don't.
Let me get a mic on. That might help.
No, I don't.
Justin, you don't talk without a microphone.
I do have questions about golf.
Well, go ahead, fire up.
When it comes to Chicago and having a tournament come through Chicago, how important is it for the PGA to have placement here? I mean, because obviously West Coast, East Coast.
Here's the thing. This is a sore spot.
I'm sorry.
Let me speak as Jackie's representative here. The PGA is clueless. The LPGA has recognized the importance of this market. The PGA gave up on Chicago, one of the best golf markets in America, when they moved the Western Open off the schedule.
Right.
And the BMW Championship was supposed to be here. Now they're rotating around the country. It's really a shame. It's a shame for the charities.
I was going to say, for you to continue to have the commitment to bring the LPGA to Chicago, how important is that for Chicago to have – you know, major professional golf come through this area?
No, I think it's great. And I think, you know, having this event here for the second consecutive year after having it held last year at Olympia Fields, I think this is great for the area and great for the game. And we'll continue to hopefully look at times when we can come back. I know this event is now going to go up to Hazeltine National next year in 2019. And then in 2020, we'll head to Aronimink Golf Course.
We're only giving you 2 years off, then you're bringing it back.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay.
I was thrilled when the Solheim Cup was here, too.
Yes.
And that was absolutely a blast. I think that brought a lot of new golfers, fans to the area, don't you think?
Yeah. I think the fans are continuing to grow. I think the more events that they're exposed to and the more that they attend, they're really starting to love the game, and they realize that the females play just as well as the males. So it's really great exposure for us.
Dave?
One of the things we've seen, Jackie, I think, is that the golfers engage the galleries and they engage the fans. How much responsibility do they have in helping grow the popularity, because they're willing to talk to fans and be accessible?
I think the accessibility is the number one thing that makes fans really enjoy the LPGA Tour and this championship in particular. They really do engage, especially young girls, in signing autographs, and they're really just able to kind of resonate and kind of connect with those fans.
Miles, do you have a question?
Yes, I have one question.
Go ahead, Miles.
Since, like, you work, like, at organizing the golf places, like, what's your favorite mini golf place in Chicago?
Oh, that's a good question.
That is a
solid question. What's your favorite mini golf course or hole? Like, do you like a particular thing on a hole? Do you like a windmill?
A windmill.
Truthfully, Miles, I haven't been in Chicago long enough to play at any good mini golf places, but what's yours? What's your favorite?
You seem like a windmill man to me,
yeah.
Miles. You seem like a windmill guy.
What's the one up in
Clown's Mouth? You like a
What's
Clown's Mouth?
I like
Parking.
Oh, there you go.
You like Parking?
Maggie Daly Park.
Yeah, Maggie Daly.
A really cool one now too, and it's got the different skyline.
What's the indoor one? That's the all glow in the dark. There's one of those two out.
Yeah, that one's cool.
The Maggie Daly one's great. They're thinking about moving the Masters here from Augusta.
Oh, that'd be perfect. Yes.
I don't know if you had heard. It's big news.
Right through the Hancock.
Where will you be at the golf show?
We will be actually sponsoring the long putt this year. So we're very excited. It'll be free for all attendees to come and take a chance at putting. All of the attendees that make their putt will be entered into a drawing for a chance to win a spot in our official championship pro-am that will take place on Tuesday, June 26th. We'll also have a booth at the Chicago Golf Show where we'll have this lovely trophy available for photo ops. You can learn more about the championship, register to volunteer, and also purchase tickets. We will have a buy one, get one offer going on this weekend at the golf show.
Okay.
So for any attendees, they can buy a ticket and get one free. So we hope people come on down and take advantage of it.
And the putt's, what, about 150 feet or so? Is that right?
85 feet.
Like I said, 85 feet. It's only 85 feet?
Somebody's only got a chance listen of
making
to you.
No, somebody's got a chance of making it.
Yeah, absolutely. True.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we're thrilled that the tournament's going to be here again this year. And thanks to the LPGA. Thanks to you guys and KPMG.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we appreciate you being here. Miles, they're going to take the trophy, but they'll mail it back to your house.
Huh?
Yeah, they'll send it back to your house.
Yeah.
That's funny. That's the same look I get from you guys when I talk.
I know. Huh? See, it's
what?
Universal.
So maybe it's not us.
Yeah, maybe it isn't. Back in a moment on 720 WGN and CLTV.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Justin Kaufman is here. He's Miles Kaufman's driver.
Yep.
And he also appears on 720 WGN nightly. Hey, Miles, you're on TV, man. Wave to these cameras.
Hello.
You're on CLTV right now. Hi, everybody at CLTV. We love this.
I love your
guys.
Wave. Hello.
Right. That was my jazz
hand. Hey, Ethel Merman right there. That was nice.
Would you like some more fascinating presidential facts? George Washington, shortest inauguration speech ever, 133 words, 2 minutes.
Oh,
he's like, I'm not doing this forever.
Right. What a gift. Right, what a gift to the American people.
Listen, we're going to take a shot at this. We're going to powder our wigs. I don't know if it's going to work. I'll talk to you later. And then he's out of there.
What did the networks do to fill the time?
That's the thing when you plan an entire
sometimes
day.
Sometimes shorter is better. It's more impactful.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because the guy that did the longest inauguration speech, William Henry Harrison, did it without a coat and a hat on a rainy day and died 30 days into office.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm. There you go. That's a cautionary tale, Miles. Yeah. Always wear your coat.
And
that's what you're talking about.
Your and your top hat. Yeah.
Do you know the president whose birth name was Leslie Lynch King Jr.?
Leslie Lynch.
Oh.
That's right. Gerald Rudolph Ford. Gerald Rudolph Ford. Changes.
Yeah. Oh, yes. That's right.
Yeah.
And as a young man, Rutherford B. Hayes, do you know what the B stands for?
Brian. Boss?
Burchard.
Burchard, okay.
Yeah, not a popular middle name anymore.
Yeah.
Rutherford B. Hayes fought something called lysophobia, the fear of going insane.
Oh, that's an awesome fear.
You've
heard of that?
That's a fear that totally makes sense. I have never heard of it, but it's still a fear that totally makes sense.
You're going to be some sort of scientist.
He's going to be a politician.
No, I think science. I see him in science. Politician
would be nice.
But a big politician, like a governor or a president, big time.
Yeah. But then I get rumors spread around me.
True.
Some of them are false. Some of them are definitely true.
Fake news, right.
Dustin, plug your show again, man.
We were download 7 to 11 every night here on WGN, but we're going to be at WeWork Kinsey, right at Kinsey and State, doing a happy hour show. Live guests, free food, free booze. This would be on Wednesday, 5 o'clock to 6:30. Check the website to get information on how to RSVP.
What do you think of your dad's job, Miles? Do you think it's a cool job?
I think it's a cool job because you get to be on it like every night, and you get to be like saying it to the world. Yeah. And then like if you see somebody that you know, but you didn't know that was hearing your show, that means they're just like, oh, hey, I heard your show. And then you're like, oh, yeah, thanks.
It's a new friend. You're making a new friend.
Yes.
You're making new friends. You want to say hi to your best friend, whoever that might be?
Hi, best friend.
Have you got a best friend? Somebody you want to say hi to, or you like everybody?
I like everybody.
Okay, you got a teacher you want to suck up to? I'll say hi to somebody.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Miss Youngman. Hi.
Your teacher's name is Miss Charman?
Miss Jogman.
Oh, Jogman. I thought maybe she was the toilet paper queen or something.
No.
And what about your mom? You haven't said hi to your mom.
Hi, Mom.
All right. I think you're covered.
You're covered. You got your teacher and your mom. Yeah. You're covered.
And your favorite radio show is what?
That's a hard question.
It's your dad's, you knucklehead. Jesse Kaufman in the download tonight. Miles is a star.
Yeah.
Right? That's what I say.
Thank you.
Bill and Wendy next. Stand by for that on 720 WGN. It's a minute before 10. Are we done with the business so we can talk to Bill and Wendy now? Okay. Thanks to Joe and Sandberg and Vandeveld and Grzanich and you two, too.
Oh, thank you, Steve. So nice.
We'll be back here tomorrow. By the way, Robert Feeder writes this morning about the announcement of our pre- and post-game for the White Sox.
Oh.
Andy Major.
Oh.
We'll do the pre-game for the White Sox.
Very nice.
What does he know about baseball?
Yeah, good
Andy
for
Major.
Andy.
You know, at the Major League level.
At the Major League level,
He is somebody with a lot of experience.
Very knowledgeable. Mm-hmm.
And Adam Hogue and Mark Carmen will split the post-game.
Outstanding.
Awesome. Nice. Very cool.
It's a good lineup.
We got it covered.
Yeah, we do.
What are you guys doing? At the Major League level.
At the Major League level, Steve?
I'm going to listen to Bill do his Hawk Harrelson impersonation all day.
Speaking of Hawk, did Andre Dawson sit in this chair?
He did.
He did?
And he asked about it.
Pretty exciting.
The star of Dawson's Creek sat in this chair.
That's exactly right.
No.
What?
Yeah. He asked about you.
He did?
Yep.
We're old time.
I loved how he remembered his favorite at bat.
Yeah.
Like, can you remember your favorite radio show?
No.
How about your favorite wiffle ball at bat?
That I can remember. Yes. Yeah.
What is your favorite radio show?
It'd be this one.
This one.
Oh. Yeah, of course it would.
Of course it would. Although the Lutheran hour is pretty good, too. I like that.
It's not bad.
It's really not good.
It's an hour.
No, it's a half hour, but they call it the Lutheran hour.
Are you guys behind my idea for ice chicken dancing in the Olympics?
Oh, that would be so exciting. Do it. Is it too late?
That's fine.
For this one, yeah.
You think we've annoyed Bertrand yet? We can go another minute, see if we can get there.
Oh, no, you're there.
See you tomorrow.